Blog Talk Radio. Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
The man you're about to see in here, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. Three, four.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to
sing along.
Every voice and sing, till it in heaven rain, rain with the harmony, oh, liberty. Let our rejoices rise high, burning with love, loud as the orgy.
Our hearts sung with the wine of the world we forget. Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, Your Sister Under God's Construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Jimmy Underground Radio Network is officially on the air. about to get ready to get into Black History Month. And when I was coming up, it used to be Black History Week, and then expanded to Black History Month. The great Dr. Cotter G. Woodson wanted to take some time out and list the accomplishments that African Americans have achieved and our path to becoming Americans. When I was coming up, it meant so much to celebrate African American History Week, then month. But now you don't hear too much about it. And I just had a thought. With this liberal agenda, I hate saying that word, boy, I sound so racist. With this liberal agenda out here in the school system, by dumbing down America, they're not going to teach African American history, because when you peel back African American history, you see that the core of who was keeping blacks down was the Democratic Party. Oh, hell. The Civil War was about Republicans versus the Democrats. The Democrats won a right to keep their free labor, to keep economic stronghold. The Republicans are like, you're not going to hold this free labor and strangle us down. We're going to free these slaves. And thus, here we go right then. Bull Connor, hosing down, white citizen council. We can go on and on. But what we're going to do today is we're going to get into why blacks vote Democrat. What makes blacks go that route? I had a hard time uploading some things today. Got froze out in the studio. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play an excerpt from something Charles Love, we'll have him on later on, sent us from the Heartland Institute on, you know, his book, Why Blacks, History of Blacks and the Republican Party. I'm going to start you off with that, and we're going to take your calls and go from there. 347-838-9825 is the number. Let me see if I get anything set up right here.
I want to first talk about where the book came from and the idea of why I ended up writing the book, and go through what the point of it is and what I'm trying to achieve, and then obviously I'll take any questions and discuss further. So the book was not I didn't get an epiphany, or I didn't sit down and say, you know, I want to write a book, what's my topic going to be, and I started doing research. What happened was, I guess, in the 2008 presidential election, politics tends to, from a presidential election standpoint, come out more, and people tend to talk about it more. Listening to people talk and watching the news and hearing comments between McCain and Obama, and McCain would make an argument about one of Obama's, you know, policy views or something, and I would hear these angry responses. And I thought that was kind of odd, but, you know, I generally just kind of ignore it and not say anything. So that went on throughout the process of that election. Obama wins. Everyone's excited. We go back to normal. And then you hear all the anger when different people attack the president. And then the same thing happened again when Romney ran. So I started to wonder why all of a sudden, one, as far as most of us who pay attention know, whether it's right or wrong, Democrats tend to attack the president when he's a Republican, and it goes the other way when the president's a Democrat. But now, when you disagree with the president, you're a racist. And I wondered why, and I would ask my friends and say, if McCain makes a comment or Romney makes a comment during an election, and you disagree with him, why can't you just be wrong as opposed to being a racist? Why can't you just say, that guy made a point, it's a crazy point, and I don't agree with it? And their responses to me was that They have to be racist because all Republicans are racist. So, logically, none of this made sense to me. So I knew that they weren't using logic to come up with their responses or their beliefs. So it made me question, well, why do we vote primarily as blacks the way we do? Because a lot of people don't base things on logic or why they vote the way they vote. But I realized that the discrepancy was so much larger and such, you know, there was such a dichotomy with the black community as compared to other communities. So women may tend to vote for Democrats more a little bit, you know, Hispanics, Jews, everyone has that group that's a little bit one way or the other. But nobody was 95-5 but us. So I'm like, okay, why is that? And what I found was, for most people I talk to, they say that, well, my parents or my family always voted Democrats, so I just did. I never really paid attention. Or I was told this about the Republicans. So it led me to question both why they did it that way and why the Republicans, after years of this, haven't done anything to change it. And Joseph made some good points about the outreach thing, and that's interesting because it's not that it's not necessary, but the way the Republicans tend to do it is, you know, counterproductive. It almost may be better not to do it at all. You know, because if you show up in the black community every 4 years when there's a presidential election, you're going to look like an opportunist. Nobody's going to take you seriously. So I've always wondered why there aren't just an ongoing set of policies and events and things to do that you just do where you do in your neighborhood, you do it in other neighborhoods. So I've asked that question to some in the Republican Party and have not really gotten an answer, but that just seems to make sense. So when I wrote the book, it was more, okay, how can we get these two groups together? They used to be together, obviously, right? Blacks used to vote for Republicans, you know, pretty much 95% of the time. So why was there a change, and what can you do, and why should they listen to each other? Do they need each other, which is where I lead to at the end. So in doing that research and putting the book together, I said, okay, what is different about my approach in the book than some of the other books out there that I see? And what I found was, I try to be open to everyone, even the people that I disagree with, because I think I can learn something from everyone. But what I find from the book, I love the titles like Liberalism is a Social Disorder, and, you know, Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot, and all that kind of stuff. So you're only losing the argument if you... My goal is a little different. My goal is to get everyone to kind of just take away the labels, more of a, you know, libertarian, independent kind of approach. Even though I do say that I'm a conservative, you don't have to be and I don't have to agree with you, but listen to what everybody has to say and make your own opinion. But most people won't listen based on the label. So, since my goal is to get everyone to listen, I don't think it works if you're attacking people. So, you know, that's the first thing that's different. I wasn't, you know, calling out people or saying Democrats are this or saying Republicans are this. And I also wanted to eliminate that misconception that if you're black and you're a conservative, it's because you're wealthy and you made it and you went to an Ivy League school, and it's just because you don't care about the other black people who aren't in the position as you. So I start off the book talking about my background because I think it mirrors that of many black people in my age range. I grew up in an all-black community. I grew up in a family of Democrats. I grew up in a family where no one went to college. I went to college and dropped out initially. So I don't think that my background was any different from anyone else's. So it took away that whole elitist table that, you know, well, he's just one of them kind of deal. So once I kind of set that ground, the background for myself and where I came from and what I learned, I kind of went into how I got started to follow politics and what I found and started to kind of disprove a lot of misconceptions that I found. So I took everything that I heard, like, Republicans are rich, right, which we know all of them aren't rich, but some of them are, and they're successful business people, but they don't realize that the wealthiest people in Congress are Democrats. They don't realize that. Speaking of realize, the other thing I noticed is, this is what really shocked me, I'll be 43 years old this year, and I was speaking to friends who were between 38 and 50, who openly told me, because I didn't think it was odd, that I never followed politics until Barack Obama won, which you can take that however you want to take it, but what I found interesting from it was the fact that they say that, but if I talk to them today, we will have a debate, and they will debate me like they're political scholars. So now everybody, that's part of the reason why you can't win the debate, because everyone became an overnight expert when he became president. So they have nothing to compare it to, and they don't have any, you know, previous information or education in politics. But you can't teach, so you may be armed with the information. But how are you going to give them that information? Are you going to go to them and say, listen, stupid, let me tell you how this really is. You're a Democrat and you're not that bright, so let me explain it to you. Right? They're not going to listen to you, right? So when I watch the news and I hear the way a lot of information is being disseminated from conservatives and Republicans on TV, I just roll my eyes and I say, you can't believe that method of giving information is going to work. So you have to kind of put some sugar in the mouth, so to speak. So I was telling Jim that and Joseph that most of the events I get invited to speak, I get fortunately get a chance to speak to a lot of people. But unfortunately, they all tend to be in the suburbs. And so I know that there are conservatives in the city, but everything seems to be, it's like they're so strong and they're so galvanized and they're rah-rah in the suburbs, and then in the city it's nothing. I went to an event and I got into kind of a debate with gubernatorial candidates and with Dan Pop. So I asked him a question. I said, okay, everything sounds great, but here's my question. If Bill Brady is a great example, Bill Brady lost the governor's seat and he won 99 counties out of 102. I think Chicago matters. I think Cook County matters. So if you put all your efforts into people that are more willing to listen to you and you don't want to put in the work to speak to the people who are less likely to listen to you, you're destined to fail. So then I get in the book about why blacks need the Republican Party and why Republicans need blacks. So from that standpoint, I say, doesn't matter who's right or wrong, I have my own opinion. But if you think that everyone should listen to both parties and you think that you may be a conservative, you think that they have slightly better ideas, you won't get them on a national level if Republicans continue to write off Atlanta and Chicago and New York and L.A. and think they're going to win national elections. So it doesn't work for them, especially since, you know, minority groups tend to vote more Democrat, and they tend to grow, they seem to be growing at a faster rate. So that doesn't work for them. And for blacks, I just simply ask a simple question. I say, you've been voting Democrat either because someone else told you to or because you think their policies may be better for you as black people, because a lot of people, you know, I get into how a lot of the views and issues that people talk about, and they don't base them on logic, but they don't really base them on race. They're basing it on selfishness. We're all selfish. We want what is going to be best for me, what is in my best interest, which it could have been worded better, but which is why Mitt Romney got in trouble when he said that 47% of the people just weren't going to vote for him anyway. They already wrote him off, and he wasn't going to try to get their vote. It wasn't that he was saying, I don't want those black people to vote for me. He's just saying it's in their best interest to continue to get the benefits that they're getting, so they're going to vote for the person to get them the benefits, right? Well, that self-interest goes both ways, but I just say to black people at the end of that, I say, but what if you're wrong? What if you vote for Democrats and you think their policies are better and they don't work? Then what happens, right? You've already written off the other half of the population because you won't even listen to what the Republicans have to say. That's a problem. But then the other thing is, that Republicans, I'll say that if they're a large portion, if not half of the population, and you're writing them off and you're not listening to their issues, you think they're wrong. But then the Democrats, who used to come into your neighborhood and ask for your vote and, you know, see what you needed to get their vote, but now that they know that they're going to get your vote anyway. So now, if you have a Democrat in a close race and they need to get every vote, squeeze every vote they can out of it, they go to women's group and they say, okay, what do you need for me to get my vote? And they go to Jews and say, what do you need to get my vote? And they go to Hispanics and they say, what do you need to get my vote? But they don't go to the black community because you can't really get much more than the 95 and 96 they're getting. So you have no leverage at that point. So for one thing, I'd say, even if you don't agree with the Republican Party, maybe you need to just lie to them and use that as leverage and tell the Democrats, you know, I'm going to vote for the Republicans if you don't give me something, start showing me something. Because if we talk about the civil rights movement in that early 60s time, when the shift started to happen after Barry Goldwater, we're talking 50 years. So for 50 years, really we can go all the way back to FDR, because the Republicans still got 25 to 30% of the vote, but it was majority Democrat at that time. So 80 years. So you have to just take the emotion out, you know, put the information in, get the results, and say in 80 years of voting primarily for Democrats, what has the black community gotten? And ask that question and then act accordingly. But that's not what they do. So the question becomes, has it been beneficial only voting for one party? We have a two-party system from a black community standpoint. Whites have a choice. There are a lot of white liberals. There are a lot of white conservatives. But the difference is they have a choice. They made a conscious decision that based on my beliefs, this is the party I'm going to align myself with, and these are the people I'm going to vote for. But we don't have that option. It becomes, if you're black, you vote for Democrats, and that's what you do. Excuse me. And so the other reason is just beyond whether you agree with the issues or not and listening to both parties is that, you know, you should consider Republican Party because you don't want to have, you know, all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. So the book was not intended to tell people Republicans are right and vote for Republicans. When reading it, you'll find that I don't get into many issues because I wanted the focus to be on why we think a certain way and why we vote a certain way and how that mindset needs to change and why. So if I got into my beliefs on every issue, people would say either get turned off because they disagree with me and close the book. Or they want to, you know, you meet me and you say, I want to talk to you about your views on abortion. I want to talk to you about your views on, you know, gay rights or whatever, which is not the point of the book. The point of the book is, why do you vote this way? Because, you know, when I talk about the misconceptions, I mentioned Rich, and then another one is that all conservatives are right-wing zealots, which is not true, but what is a right-wing zealot? Is it because you're a Christian, you believe in God, or because you're crazy? Most of them are like, if you quote the Bible and you believe in God, then you're a right-wing zealot. Wouldn't that make most black people a right-wing zealot? So that's not the reason why, right? So I also feel this with a lot of, you know, data and stats. So it says, okay, what percentage of blacks go to church compared to whites, compared to Democrats, compared to conservatives, that kind of thing. And the information is there. So they can argue with me. So when you talk to that person who just started following politics this morning, and they say, but I know all this, say, okay, did you know this? Well, I don't believe it. Okay, you're wrong. Okay, check this out. You know, go to the site, read it. It came from a government site, not from a conservative site, that kind of deal. So we got that. Those two misconceptions. Then there's, you know, war. We always talk about how conservatives love war and they want to go to war and, you know, Bush was a warmonger and everybody wants to do this. But I went back in history and looked at all the wars and who was president and how we got into the wars, and it turned out that it wasn't mostly Republicans. You know, about equal if you want to count the Civil War, but as most people say that was good, you throw that one out, him being a Republican, not a Democrat. Right? So everything's not, you know, it's not so cut and dry, but, so I just wanted to have people say, okay, just open your mind and listen to them. And if you listen to them and you disagree with them, then vote for Democrats. You know, I'm not here to make you a Republican because, you know, I can't say I agree with everything they say, just like any other party. But if you ask them, would they really say that they disagree, I mean, that they agree with Democrats, everything Democrats say? No one, I mean, what politician has ever run is like, that guy's perfect. He's done nothing wrong. And I agree with everything that he says. It doesn't happen. So, yeah, what I found in the research, which was interesting, though, is I found a lot of people, well, this I still don't understand. Maybe you all can help me out with this one. But I found a lot of people who call themselves one-issue voters. So, you know, I got that one thing. That's what I vote on. If you agree with me on that, I'll vote for you. So who cares what you do with the economy? Who cares what you do with, you know, anything else? As long as you're on my side on abortion or gay rights or whatever that thing is, you're my guy. I mean, when you say it out loud, it's so obvious how that can be problematic, but I know that people do that. But there's another problem in that, because even though we make assumptions and you say, on average, Republicans are like this and Democrats are like this, but from a candidate standpoint, nobody agrees on every issue. So you can't just say, I'm going to vote for Democrats because more of them tend to agree with my one issue, because there are Republicans that may agree with that issue, with you on that issue, but have better ideas on all the other things that you don't really care that much about. Because every Republican isn't against gay marriage, right? But they assume that they all are. like you're Republican, so that means this. So I talked to some of my, a couple of my friends. I have one that we debate a lot about politics, and he says to me, well, you know, I've been listening to you, I read your book, and everything you say makes perfect sense. But your only problem is that that's you, and you're logical, but all the other Republicans are crazy. You know, so if they felt like you, you're nodding your head in the back, if they felt like you, then I could probably consider Republicans, but they're not like you. I said, well, why do you say that? How can they all be like, so now I got them engaged, so I'm happy. Okay, why do you say that? And he says, well, okay, I'll give you an example. The other day, Republican, your guy from Iowa, I mean, some small town that was established 4 months ago, but he's my guy, you know, was on TV, not even on TV. He was at a restaurant, and they got a clip of him saying this, and they played it, and that's your guy. And now, what do you think about that? He's got me. And I was like, I think it's crazy. See, I agree with you. However, I don't even know who that politician is, and I don't live in that state. So how does that person speak for me? But, let's follow your logic. How about the woman on the South Side, the Democrat politician, who said that all the shootings in Chicago is bad? We have to admit that. But, you know, has anybody considered that maybe the cops are doing all these shootings? And he wrote it down. He's like, somebody said that? Yeah. That's crazy. So what do you think about that? He said, I think that's crazy. So she speaks for you? That's your girl? But no, I didn't even know she said it. Exactly. So here's the problem. It's not that, you know, Republicans don't have any crazy people in the party. Of course they do. And so the Democrats, it's just that because the Democrats control the media, our crazies get on TV and theirs don't. That's it. That's the difference. So whenever somebody says some crazy statement and he's a Republican, it's going to be in the news for 3 days. So that's what people hear. So to that, I just say, you know, and that it's Joseph mentioned, it's a constant, you know, getting out there, communicating. I mean, his lead-in was perfect. He talked about how he went from, I think it was 7 or 8 tables of blacks at the fundraisers to 2 or 3. I go to, when I speak at these places in the suburbs, actually, it's a lot of, I mean, some of them are Tea Party fans, so, you know, and you know a lot of them are racist. So I'm speaking to the room full of racists, right? So the racists say to me, it's a fact, right? That all MAT party equals race. So I'm speaking to all the racists. And so one of the racists said to me, so how do we talk to what do we say to black people? Like, I work with a girl who's always saying this, and we debate this, and I don't know what we say. Now, that's the problem. Black people aren't aliens. Why do you need to talk to them differently? Talk to them the same way that, now some of them are going to be crazy, just like the crazy people are. Man, when you realize they're crazy, stop talking to them. But you still have to initiate the conversation and try to, if they want to have the conversation about that topic, you can't be angry and you can't be, you know, talk like, well, I don't agree with your views, so you're crazy. Just cut it off and say, okay, well, why do you think that? Because that's the reason I call the book logic. Because I like to let people come to their own conclusion as opposed to telling me, you're wrong, that won't work, and this is why. You give me the issue, and I disagree with what I was saying. Oh, okay, so how would that work? And they explain to him, okay, so then what would happen after that? Then what would happen after that? And then what would... And then they go, oh, I guess that wouldn't work, would it? See? Solve their own problem. I didn't have to say a word. But, and what I found had the most fun with when I'm at the racist meetings is that, but it's a fact, right? That's what they tell me. But what's funny about it is this is the other side, because I talk about why blacks need Republicans, and then I say why Republicans need blacks and just numbers and all that other stuff. But the other thing that's funny is that they're the opposite of the one issue. So we got a lot of my liberal friends are one issue voters, like gay marriage, and that's the only thing I care about. But there, it's like, I refuse to negotiate or you know, compromise my beliefs. So which you shouldn't have to, but it's to the point that if that guy is a Republican, I agree with him on 8 of 10 things, but he's not, you know, maybe you agree on 9 of 10 things, but you don't think he's as passionate about number 6 as you are, you're not going to vote for him. Now he's a write-off. So I'm like, you're not going to agree with everybody on everything, so let me, again, understand the logic here. So you agree with him on most things, but because he doesn't, you know, approach it the way you want to approach it and speak the way you speak, you're going to beat him up. So we got this rhino thing out there. But we don't have a bunch of Democrats out there calling people dinos, right? They have to disagree, right? Because people, if you ask us, everybody in this room something, we're not going to agree on everything. So we know they disagree, but they somehow don't disagree on TV. But yeah, it's good to have hearty debate because it proves that we don't allow one member to stifle another, which is true, but you don't have to call people names. I mean, Ron Paul and who is he in the fight with, and Peter King don't need to have a fisticuffs on TV in order to get their points across. But the other thing is when they talk about not compromising their beliefs, is that, so they agree with somebody about 8 or 10. One of the best ones, I was at the Arlington Heights Tea Party event. See, I changed the name that time. And, but you know what I'm talking about, the Tea Party event. And a guy, and I talked about, well, I don't understand how, rhino or no rhino, I don't understand, whatever your beliefs are, how you're willing to do the country a disservice, in a sense, to kind of prove a point to somebody. Like, what do you mean? So and somebody came up to me and still told me I was wrong. I lost that battle. But I said, so let me get this straight. Obama ran for president against either one of them, because they said the same thing about both. Most recently, let's pick Mitt Romney. So he ran against Romney. And you're a staunch conservative. So he won the nomination. You should have voted for somebody else. But he won the nomination. This is the general. You don't think he's right enough. So the way you're going to fix it is you're going to not vote and let Obama win. And that made sense to him. Oh, okay, so you got the guy who was more liberal to win just because you really didn't want Romney to win, and that made sense. It's like, well, and so one guy came up to me after the speech and said, well, I heard your analogy, and I get what you're saying, but it's like as if you were drowning and you got two guys, and one guy's holding you 10 feet underwater and one guy's holding you 5 feet underwater. Either way, you're going to drown, is what he told me. So I got a better chance at 5 feet than I do at 10 feet. So that becomes a problem. So then we have that. We're always fighting against the people who won't listen. And we forgot fighting against the fact that the media won't put their crazes on TV, but they'll put our crazes on TV. But now we have people in our own party say, unless you're the right kind of right, or as right as I say you need to be, then you don't count and I'm going to write you off. But not right, which is probably the problem with, I'm going to generalize now with conservatives, is that they're more about being right and doing the right thing and not compromising, but sometimes it can be a challenge and hurt you in the sense that I look at it as if you're trying to win an election. Now, policy is a different thing, but you're trying to win a general election for president. Kind of like, you know, a playoff game in NFL, right? You may have played all season like this, but you look at your opponent and say, okay, now I got one opponent, but one game I need to win to go to the Super Bowl. So this is their strength, so I need to combat their strength. So I might need to change the strategy a little bit, you know. But they don't want to do that. Because if you change the strategy, then the right wing of the party is going to say you're compromising. No, I'm winning the game, right? So which is what you have to do. So we have that problem where people want you to go out and say this, and we all may agree with it, and it may make sense, but it just doesn't test well in the country, right? Now, again, we're writing off L.A. and Chicago and Atlanta and New York, and then we lose again. So unless you're planning on how we're all going to just run to the plain states, right, there's got to be a better approach in what we're doing. So at the end, the last chapter is where the party should go and what it should do. So I was a little, self-aggrandizing, because I said they should buy the book and go on tour and just go out and say, okay, let's just have discussions. Republican Party, you know, all the different think tanks, just going into the community and say, okay, we're going to have a Republican book club. And we're going to sit down, invite everybody, and we're just going to discuss, you know, those types of things and talk about, you know, well, why is it that you think that? You can't do it during an election year only, right? So just go in the community and have these conversations and just solicit conversations. And when you get beat down and put out and say, go away, just keep doing it as opposed to waiting to another election. Or talk about how they can do different events. Like, you know, I was telling Kevin about, you know, like Veterans Day. Like everybody, I was listening to 560 and Big John and Amy had a breakfast for the veterans, which was great. But, of course, it was in the suburbs because I guess there are no veterans in the city. So why not have, you know, all the groups have one, you know, like, you know, one big, you know, event that has 10 locations. you do 4 or 5 in the suburbs, and, you know, in the west suburbs, a couple in the south suburbs, and 3 in the city. Right? Different things like that. You got to find a way to think differently about how you get your message out, which was my point. And I think that, I guess the national, the RNC is supposedly trying to find a way to do outreach, but they're doing the same old kind of, you know, let's find a black person and send a black person to the black, because you can't do black because then you're the token, right, for the black people, and that's what they're going to say when you send a black person. You can't send the white guy because they're not going to trust them. So it's got to be a mix. You need some old people, some young people, some white people, some black people, some people who live in the community, some conservatives, some independents. And that's the other thing I say. Why do we write off the independents, the liberals and the independents? The guy is already on the fence. Instead of saying, get out of here, you're crazy, maybe you should be pulling them over the fence on your side, you know, as opposed to, you got the rhino parlors on one side, and then you got the libertarians, those are the whack jobs. We don't want the crazy people at our party. You know, so again, we're limiting. So now we're down to this small little bucket of people who sit in a room and, you know, agree and then go out and do nothing after that. So that, in a nutshell, how am I? I'm good. Is what the book is about. You'll keep going, you say. Well, right on. And I may have missed a few humorous finer points. The differences between racism and, just things that we call racism when it's really more like selfishness and defining what racism is. Because even that became a kind of a point of contention for some people. Everybody had a different definition for what it was. Some people were like, if you don't like another person, some people said, if you have power over this person, they added all these different stuff. Nobody goes to the dictionary anymore, I guess. But, was meant to be kind of a tool for getting people who want to be active and interested in politics or, make their vote count, kind of use it as a way to say, okay, I'm going to use a logical vote, take out emotions, stop assuming that everybody in either party thinks a certain way, because from a racist standpoint, I always found it interesting that 100% of, I'm trying to remember the math because it was really hard, so 100% of the Republicans were racist, 60 to 70% of white people are racist, but half of the white people are Democrats. But none of the white Democrats are racist. Did I do that right? I might not have carried something. But that didn't make sense to me. So I was like, okay, show me how that makes sense. I mean, it's just drawing a Venn diagram, it doesn't make sense. Forget about what you believe. Let's assume your numbers are right. Again, let you solve the problem for me. Solve that problem for me. Solve for X. And it can't be done. So that's the book in a nutshell. That's... C. Douglas, Charles Douglas, where I got 18 different names. And I guess I'm open to Q&A.
Yeah, my man Charles Douglas. You know him. I'm not going to deal with the question and answer period. I'm going to let him call in. But, let's keep the shit flowing. Let's examine the black loyalty to the Democrats.
Yo, Ernest,
how long have I been doing this rant thing? Since what, 2007? And y'all are still watching? Thank you. I've commented at length on the relationship between blacks, Democrats, and the Republican Party. Videos like Begin Deprogramming, where I examine that often asked question, why is it that the majority of the black community consistently votes Democrat? What's funny is that you kind of have to scratch your head and wonder, why is it that the majority of the black community votes Democrat? But back in the day, when the majority of the black community voted Republican, it was pretty clear why. Actually, that's not entirely true. If you were wondering why blacks voted for Republicans, it was because you were wondering if they had a death wish. Am I lying? Man, you ain't got to look that far today to see the hostility that'll come your way if you're black and you dare to be a Republican. And just a few decades ago, that hostility came along with lynchings. Now, people have been led to believe that these lynchings were done by a bunch of crazy rednecks running around in white sheets because that's the American way. But y'all, it wasn't the American way. It was the Democrat way. The Ku Klux Klan was the terrorist fraternity founded by the Democrat Party, and their message was simple. Vote or die. And when you vote, you make sure it's for Democrats. Now, who is it that was carrying on that vote or die message? Oh, yeah, Diddy. Now, do you think that whole vote or die, rock the vote campaign is propaganda for you to vote Republican? No, it's for you to vote Democrat. The Klan wanted white voters to vote Democrat. They didn't want black folks to vote at all. But if black people were going to vote, they wanted them to vote Democrat, too. And you can be sure that the Klan has some choice words for black people who voted Republican. Why don't you learn this stuff in public school? Because the public school system is run by the Democrat Party and the unions. But what the scratch and sniff happened, man? The Democrat Party has been the pro-slavery party, the pro-segregation party, the anti-civil rights party, but the majority of the black community votes Democrat. Now, some will say it's because Martin Luther King gave his endorsement to Democrat John F. Kennedy. This supposedly happened after Robert Kennedy made a few phone calls to get Martin Luther King released from jail. But that same Robert Kennedy that made a few phone calls to get Martin Luther King released from jail is the same Robert Kennedy that gave the okie-dokie to J. Edgar Hoover to tap Martin Luther King's phone.
They wanted to catch Martin Luther King engaging in dialogue that was favorable to communism.
They didn't like Martin Luther King. Know why? Because he was a Republican. And actually, man, as far as I know, he never did endorse John F. Kennedy because Martin Luther King was a church pastor who stood by the principle of not endorsing candidates. Martin Luther King offered his thanks to the Kennedys. I don't think he offered an endorsement. But there's Martin Luther King Sr., who was also a Republican. He knew that the Democrats were not friends of the black community, and that included the Kennedys. Why would Martin Luther King endorse John F. Kennedy? Allow me to speculate. Could it be that Martin Luther King Sr. also got a phone call? A phone call that might have gone something like, look here, you want a safe and speedy release of your son from jail? How about a friendly nod for Kennedy in exchange? Not to mention, while John F. Kennedy was a senator, he opposed the civil rights bill that was being advanced by the Republican President Eisenhower. Now, like Republicans, Democrats like the Kennedys back then didn't like communism, and Southern Democrats really hated communism. But let's clear this up, though. Hating communism does not make you a capitalist, and it does not make you a conservative. Adolf Hitler hated communism, too, but that didn't make him a capitalist or a conservative. I have to point this stuff out because the Democrats know that they're being exposed, so they've been going around and changing some things. So when you go out and research and Google this stuff, you're going to find that the word Democrat is being replaced by the word conservative. Especially when you go research them Southern Democrats, or Dixiecrats as they call them. They're changing the language, y'all. That's how they do. You know, kind of like the term global warming is being replaced by the term climate change. They got their foot ankle deep in their mouth on that one, and they're sore losers about it, man. And sore losers are always trying to change the game. But more and more people are starting to call Democrats out on this stuff. What you mean global warming, man? It's actually been kind of cool. Well, you see, our Earth raping is causing our Earth mother to be depressed, and her depression is manifesting as changing climates. No, 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 my green friend. The fact that the Earth has two poles doesn't make her bipolar per se, like you. Those changes in the climates are called seasons and normal warming and cooling periods. The rest of us know that. Why don't y'all know that? Anyway, the Democrats were seeing that more and more the rest of the country wasn't really riding on the hateful frequency of the Southern Democrats. Now, I reckon the Democrat Harry Truman knew that. He was also a member of the Ku Klux Klan. He just didn't attend their slumber parties.
At least that's what he says.
But if Truman wanted to be president, he was going to have to show that he was in tune with the rest of the country. He was going to have to show that he was hip, he was cool, you know, denying civil rights to blacks is for squares, man. So he throws down with things like signing executive order to end segregation in the military and to end discrimination in federal employment. That made him look a little better to the rest of the country, and it made Democrats look a little better to black people. But to his racist homies in the South, he's like, now don't y'all go thinking I'm expecting you to enforce all this civil rights crap. That's where Eisenhower comes in. He's the one who actually put into action what Truman only put on paper. Eisenhower moved to desegregate schools and the military. And if he had any reservations about desegregating schools, it was because he felt it was an issue that needed to be resolved on state levels. But Eisenhower did see that these people were being jerks and that their laws conflicted with the supreme law of the land. That's why there's that instance of Eisenhower sending in military support to make sure that black kids could go to school. Now, Martin Luther King did ask Eisenhower for more help. He wanted Eisenhower to be more verbal against what was happening in the South. Eisenhower's like, man, I've been expressing my views on this, and to tell you the truth, I really don't know what good another speech for me is going to do for you. And Eisenhower was right, because the speech that was going to be the super rump shaker wasn't meant to come through Eisenhower. It was meant to come through Martin Luther King. So between Truman and the Kennedys, what civil rights meant was votes. It's like Truman set up the ball and the Kennedys spiked it. The Democrat Margaret Sanger already said it. You want to hoodwink them Negroes? You make nice with their ministers. Mm-hmm. And when Robert Kennedy got Martin Luther King released from jail, it made Democrats look good to the black community. So, of course, the black community was really disenfranchised. And when Martin Luther King busted on the scene to be the champion of civil rights, he really had the hearts of the black community with him, as well as a lot of other Americans. And when the people saw that their champion was freed from jail by a Democrat, they were so happy that they forgot that it was Democrats who put Martin Luther King in jail in the first place. They forget about Democrats like George Wallace and Democrats like Bull Firehose KKK Connor. There's the pro-segregationist Democrat Ernie Vandiver, the governor of the state that Martin Luther King was jailed in. FDR was instrumental in getting black people to start switching over to Democrat because of entitlements. See, the Democrats have had a system. You gotta break the black community down, and every once in a while you gotta give them a little something-something, you know, so they stay tolerant of the place that you reduced them to. Now, the Democrats knew at some point the black community was going to rise against them. But that's okay, because they had a plan for that, and they still use that plan today. Well, you know all that awful stuff that's been happening to you? You know, it was those dang Republicans. We've always been with you, brother.
There are a lot of people who wrote these eulogies for Senator Byrd in the newspapers, and I read a bunch of them, and they mentioned that he once had a fleeting association with a Ku Klux Klan.
Fleeting association on the Rachel Grant claim, the Good Cyclops.
And what does that mean? I'll tell you what it means.
It means the Democratic and all going to think that you were listening to think. By the way, that boy Clinton's his mind thinking about what's 40 when the filibuster Civil Rights Act.
He was a country boy from the hills and hollows of West Virginia. He was trying to get elected.
Yeah, yeah, he was trying to win the votes of the people like you, Bill.
And maybe he did something he shouldn't have done, and he spent the rest of his life making it up. And that's what a good person does.
The only redeeming thing that Robert Byrd did was leave the Klan. Anyway, go home.
But how did this disenfranchisement come about? Well, let's keep working our way back, and on the way, we'll take a quick look at the presidency of the Democrat Woody Woodrow Wilson. He knew the game. Oh, yeah, I'm all about seeing the advancement of you Negro folk. There he was, out there courting the black vote. Woody would have courted and he did ride, Crambone. Oh, yeah, y'all black people could vote back then. It's just that Democrats had this really bad habit of coming into power and taking away the rights of black people. Republicans are the ones who would come in and restore the rights. The last time that happened was when Lyndon B. Johnson was president, a Democrat. But he got that Civil Rights Act passed with Republican support, not so much with Democrat support. Anyway, back to Woodrow Wilson. Now, what did Woodrow Wilson do? He did the same thing that the Democrats of today do. He patronized the black community for their votes. And what did he do with their votes? Well, he did things like segregate the military and fire blacks who had federal positions. And to add insult to injury, he hosted the showing of the pro-KKK movie Birth of a Nation in the White House. Now, even though black people typically voted Republican back then, they got suckered into voting Democrat. Now, before Woodrow Wilson, you had the Republican president Teddy Roosevelt, or he called his party the Bull Moose Party. He was still a Republican, though. Teddy Roosevelt was digging Booker T. Washington, who was also a Republican. Teddy and Booker T. kicking it at the White House. Teddy Roosevelt, a Republican, invites blacks in. Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat, kicks blacks out. Yet black people today say we love them Democrats. Teddy Roosevelt had to work to repair civil rights due to the damage done to it by Southern Democrats. Southern Democrats had become really, really mad about all these cool-level Republicans being in the White House for so long. So the Klanocrats were dispatched to turn up the heat on how people were going to vote. So why the loyalty to the Democrat Party? Well, let's keep working our way on back. So let's look at the South wanting to break away from the Union. You got the Southern Democrat representatives that wanted to break away so they could be the slave-holding Confederate states. Oh, yeah? Well, how come black men were fighting with Confederates in uniform? Because they had to. They had to be in uniform, y'all, because the Confederate military didn't want to mistake them for runaway slaves with guns and shoot them. They needed every man they could get. It's another example of Democrats using black people when it's convenient for them. So those slaves were forced to fight, and those slaves that were fighting against the Union were hoping to get captured by the Union. Don't get me wrong, you have many of them slaves that were led to believe that the Union was the enemy. Kind of like how it is today. You got many in the black community that are led to believe that the Republicans are the enemy. And I'm sure there were just a lot of slaves out there that were eager to shoot at some white people, huh? Oh, I mean, come on. Now, even today, you have these left-wing cynics that would rather be suspicious of Abraham Lincoln because he said this.
My paramount objective in this struggle is to save the Union, and it's not either to save or destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could do it by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would do that also.
But there's what he said, and then there's what he did. Now, I could be all hung up on that and bitter about it, too, but then I think about what the Democrat General George B. McClellan said. Our bloody civil war has now lasted years under the mismanagement of Abraham Lincoln. Nearly 1 million white lives have been sacrificed. So the Democrats of today try to say that Lincoln was indifferent to slavery, but the Democrats of Lincoln's day saw Lincoln as clearly anti-slavery, and they didn't like it. McClellan also charged Lincoln with this.
Lincoln has declared his intention to convert the Civil War into a war for forcible abolition and Negro equality, social and political.
This Democrat was a general during Lincoln's administration, and just like pretty much the rest of the Democrats, he was at odds with Lincoln. McClellan ran against Lincoln because he saw Lincoln as a slavery-abolishing Republican who committed the abominable act of sacrificing white lives for black freedom. So what do you want to believe? That Lincoln didn't really care about blacks because of a few lines that he stated? All those people that were killed in the war? That was just a political stunt. He really didn't care about freeing slaves. And forget all that abolitionist-laden Republican platform stuff that Lincoln ran on. Forget all that. And forget about the fact that he signed the 13th Amendment. Man, he's the president. He ain't got no business doing that anyway. Now, you can find accounts of Lincoln suggesting that the white race is the superior race, but hey, I never said Lincoln was perfect. But despite such sentiments, he still saw blacks as people, people deserving of the same rights as everybody else outlined in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. But unfortunately, a lot of people would rather assume the worst about Lincoln and side with Democrats. Why? Well, let's keep going on back. Let's examine the paradox of Thomas Jefferson, a Democratic Republican. The Republican side of him knew that we enjoy a constitutional republic. His philosophy on the rights of men and the role of government was brilliant and revered by many people today. That's the Republican side of him. But the Democrat side of him is the side that said, but these rights are good for me, not you, namely you black folks. Matter of fact, let's get to cracking with that fugitive slave law and snatch up a few of those Negroes and put them into slavery.
Invasion of the Negro Snatchers.
And that's just another example, but people in the black community still side with Democrats. Why? Could it be because the Republican Party stands closest to the Constitution? You know, that document that has that three-fifths clause in it, that clause that supposedly reduces black people to three-fifths of a human being? Many of y'all learned that in our liberal indoctrination system, you know, public school. And this is a prime example of how race-baiting liberals are masters at suckering the black community to keep voting for Democrats. To make the far-reaching accusation that the Constitution refers to black people as three-fifths of a human being and to get people to believe it is like amazing. Hey, let's take a look at how Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution reads.
Representative and direct taxes shall be appropriated among the several states which may be included within the Union according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding the whole numbers of free persons, including those bond to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed. Three-fifths of all others' persons.
Man, where do y'all get that black people are three-fifths of a human being out of that? First of all, those who are bound in servitude are still referred to as persons. Two, blacks aren't even mentioned. The only ethnic group mentioned are the Indians. The Indians not tax three-fifths of all other persons. This clause is reflected in Article 11 in the Articles of Confederation. Now, it is true that the proponents of slavery wanted to be able to count their slaves to be able to gain more representation. And the kind of representation that they wanted was the kind of representation that would keep slavery legal. That's sick, man. Using slaves to gain more slave-supporting representation. Ain't even right. The anti-slavery founders laid down a three-fifths clause to protect the slaves. See, the pro-slavery founders considered slaves property, not people. But they considered them people when it came time to get more representation. And the anti-slavery founders are like, man, you can't be selective about when they're people. So, yeah, there were founding fathers that thought that slavery was okay and that blacks were less than human. Those would be your patriarchs of the Democrat Party. And those who opposed slavery were the patriarchs of the Republican Party. So I got to tell y'all, I really don't see what the three-fifths clause in the Constitution has to do with slaves or persons worth. But to me, it's making a clear distinction of how Indians will be excluded from being counted. Meaning if they wanted to count an Indian in their state, that Indian had to be taxed at least three-fifths of what everybody else was paying. There had to be some sort of criteria put on the Indians so the pro-slavery folks wouldn't try to count all of them. Anyway, that's my take on it. You can get mad all you want. Now look, y'all, we know that white people have done rotten things to black folks. And not only that, they made it illegal to do rotten things to black folks. But check this out. They were Democrats. So how is it today that the majority of the black community are still loyal Democrat voters? Because for the last 50-plus years, the Democrats have had control over the entertainment industry, the media, and the educational system. They run the mediums of social engineering. They're really good at poisoning the water, framing somebody else for doing it, and then showing up pretending to be the doctor who can cure what ails you. But of course, there's a lot of stuff to research out there, y'all. These are just the conclusions that I come to when I put my little two and twos together. But you know why I believe what I believe and why I'm a conservative Republican and stuff? Because what I believe doesn't make me angry. I'm a Republican because I dig this republic that protects my freedom to worship God, and I want to keep it that way. Democrats tend to believe what makes them angry, as if negativity is the affirmation of reality. And a big part of why they are Democrats is because they hate Republicans. I can hear Democrats now, you know, you're not telling the whole story. No, it's y'all who haven't been telling the whole story. Matter of fact, y'all been telling a story with holes. We've been hearing y'all's side. Now we're telling our side.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221. Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
I couldn't shake your memory, and I never knew the sweetest love was at first. So what am I supposed to do about this curse? Oh, baby, I've got you to blame. And I'm calling, calling at your name. Oh, he was so fine. Jimmy. Oh, he was so fine. Jimmy.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Irvin.
Never meant to make you cry. You were the only one I've ever loved in my life. And though it's hard for me to show it, I've got to let you know it. 'Cause darling, I love you more each day. But the words got in my
I can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. One, two, three, hit man, bop the bop, bop it out of bebop, bop the bop, yeah, bass man, come on up. One, two, three, hit man, sound good, yeah, saxophone on the floor. One, two, three, hit it. one to shake things up. I like Johnny Mathis, but I can't do that stuff. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got S-O-U-L, soul. I can't do rock, I can't do roll. What I can do, baby, is show my soul. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul.
Thank you, Ebony. You can mute it, yeah. Having a hard time with the board here. That was Cold This Winter. Death comes all throughout the winter, boy. Memories made the coldest winter. Lost my grandma. We're going to be burying on Thursday. Where the service is going to be at, Ebony? No addresses? 11032 South Indiana, and the wake's going to be where? Wednesday. What time Wednesday?
Wednesday at Grand Funeral Home.
Grand Funeral Home Wednesday, 2701 West 63rd Street. That's the visitation. From what time to what?
4 to 7.
Okay, that's what we got going on right there. Mimi lost her uncle and her auntie, and it's cold this winter, and a lot of people losing loved ones. Just look out for y'all loved ones in this cold draft. It's cold out here. It's cold out here. Like I said, we about to come into Black History Month, and we just got to revisit African-American history. We got to revisit our history. And what I mean by that is we always be complaining that Black history is not taught in public schools. It's a plan. Because you hear about the George Wallace and the Bull Connors and the governors that locked King up and are spying on King and the Democratic, because you got to study politics when you look at history. And you always look at how people voted, then you look at how the parties, what party was in charge, who did not want segregation, the party who did not want inclusion. You look at that, and then once that is revealed to you, then, you know, once wisdom and information is given to you, then you would think clearly. I mean, just that alone can show you the plot that there is to keep you from knowing what you are and who you are. I had a show on during my hip-hop days, I mean, last Thursday, and had some people on, and we was talking about, don't we know better, or should we know better? I mean, we know where the drugs are coming from. We know they're coming from Mexico. We know this. There's not a problem. Matter of fact, they just caught $1 million of cocaine. Marijuana on 43rd. Was that 43rd? Whatever. Are you in there? It's 43rd. What do you mean? I was at 43rd and got Kim without Green. Was it Princeton? 43rd in Princeton. And then they called the other guy. They're talking about my town. Like, that's $1 million of marijuana, man. It's gone on the street. Right. So, put all these laws in. We're doing all this stuff. We know where the drug's coming from. We can go get $1 million of it right now anytime we feel like it, so we can stop that. We know that our houses are getting taken from us when we've voted for people that's going to raise our property taxes. It's like we don't care about our values no more. Here we're talking about bringing Hillary Clinton back in, and here her husband was the one who said black fathers can't step back on federal property if they had a felony. You know what I'm saying? Three strikes you out, but how we forget, how we soon forget that easily. You know what I'm saying? African American History Month, I'm not going to let people forget. I'm going to see what I can do here in the Chicago area, Cook County area, Video State, where I can celebrate the lives of African American people contribute to this country and not only the development of this country, but the development of our race here as Americans. You know, we can deal with Marcus Garvey, Back to Africa movement. We can deal with that. We can deal with all the Anwar Sadat and all the great African leaders, the Shaka Zulu. We can deal with all the great kings of Africa. We can deal all with the great kings of Africa. You know, but Wiser used to do that all the time, the great kings of Africa during Black History Month. Let's see if we can find that slate. I'm going to try to run those things. I mean, Black History Month is coming up, and we're not even celebrating it. 347-838-9825, Jimmy Lee Underground Radio Network. I'll be right back with you in one moment.
boy, a very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered far over land and sea, and he was very shy and sad of eye, but very wise, very wise was.
In a time when the strategy of Jim Crowism was to dehumanize and discredit those who were different from what was considered the mainstream of America, Dr. Woodson stood up and subsequently changed the course of history.
Dr. Woodson started the association in 1915 at the height of the ascendancy of the Ku Klux Klan, when lynchings were rampant in the United States of America, when racism was part and parcel of American ideology.
Well, of course, there were the obstacles of bigotry and of racism and of denial. Large numbers of white Americans simply could not believe that African Americans had made anything, like contributions.
Carter G. Woodson was born on December 19, 1875, in Buckingham County, Virginia. He was the son of former slaves James Henry and Eliza Riddle Woodson. He was the youngest of nine children and had to work on the farm rather than attend school.
Let me show you the man who managed to get a PhD from Harvard, only the second man after W.E.B. Du Bois, who was denied his own education and didn't get formal education until he was 20 years old. He was a remarkable human being, an extraordinary intellect.
And so he sought in every way possible to represent African Americans as people who had made enormous, significant contributions to the development of this country.
However, Dr. Woodson was determined to get an education. And at age 17, he moved to Huntington, West Virginia. And at age 20, he was finally able to enter Douglas High School. In less than 2 years, he graduated and went on to enroll at Berea College and also served as principal of his old high school. After earning his degree from Berea College, he then journeyed to the Philippines and taught from 1903 to 1907. While in the Philippines, he took numerous correspondence courses from the University of Chicago, which prepared him for study in Paris at the Sorbonne. Upon returning to the United States, he entered the University of Chicago and earned a bachelor and master's degree in history and Romance languages in 1908. During the time that Dr. Woodson taught at Dunbar High School in Washington, D.C., he became convinced that something needed to be done about the history of African Americans. African Americans were either being ignored or misrepresented, and Carter G. Woodson was not going to allow that to continue. In 1915, the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History was founded. It was created to promote and preserve African American history and culture. He also founded the Journal of Negro History in 1916 as a tool to get information to the masses. He knew that his research would not be widely distributed in a segregated America, so he took care of that himself. In 1917, Dr. Woodson wrote his first book, The Education of the Negro Prior to 1861. This piece is considered his most important contribution. Because of the difficulty he had in publishing his works, Dr. Woodson founded the Associated Publishers in 1921 to publish books and other information about black life and history. He ultimately wrote or co-wrote 22 books, among them The Negro in Our History and The Miseducation of the Negro. In 1926, Dr. Woodson founded what was called the Negro History Week. It was to expand awareness of the contributions of African Americans to our society and to instill pride in the hearts of black men, women, and children, a celebration that has grown into Black History Month and is embraced and celebrated as a part of the American fabric.
He also launched in 1926 Negro History Week, and he hoped that at least for a week, Americans would, of every stripe, Americans of black and white and brown and gray and whatever, would recognize the fact that African Americans were truly Americans, and that this country owed African Americans a great debt for what they had done to make this country what it is today.
That was a quick synopsis of Cottage with him. Sorry for the delay over with. It's the weather, get everything all. That was a quick synopsis of Cottage with him. Sorry for the you see the delay we have? Delay over with. Let me try to get everything everything rolling. Hold on, I'm trying to get everything situated right now. Let me try to get everything everything rolling. Hold on, I'm trying to get everything. All right, now that might stop the repeat there. Matter of fact, I think we need the commercial break. What do you think, Evan? You think we need to go commercial break right about now? Because all of this, we got to find what's going wrong here and why we getting this loud feedback here. And that's what we need. Wow, I'm saying a lot of texts and good response after the show. Well, listen, if you like that so far, wait till you see what we're going to have in store for you for Black History Month. You know, people sleep on our accomplishments. We're sleeping on our accomplishments. Forget what people are. We're sleeping. We're not honoring our ancestors properly. We're not carrying on tradition. And what I mean by carrying on tradition, it was in, it, coming up, let's say some two decades ago, it was important to know that a black man did wonderful work for the peanut. It was important to know.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
Hey, what's what's going on, Dan. I'm glad you checked in last little 14 minutes that I got going on here. We have a little technical difficulties. You have a hard time getting in.
I knew you were going to call me on that.
I said
Jimmy to call me out.
Hey, Jimmy. Yeah, yeah. You call in, all the phones go static, and we won't deal with that. Hey, did you see the Grammys, by the way, Dan? Let me hit up some tabloid talk. Let me know some tabloid talk. Did you see the Grammys, by the way?
I saw some of it.
You know, did you, your hero, Beyonce, what do you think about her performance?
I didn't see it. Oh, my gosh. Now I got to go look it up.
Well, never mind. Anyway, what's going on with you, Dan?
No,
tell
me what you think about it.
But you know, man, hey, only one black performer, that was Beyonce and Jay-Z. You know, man, hey, man, I ain't a Mike fan, but I'm a music fan. And Mike will be turning over his grave if he's looking at how the Grammys was just garbage. You know, before, you know, you know who was the best performer, this, that, and other. It was just a concert. It really didn't make no difference. Really didn't care. White rappers, white twerkers. You know, I'm not going racist like that, but I know the white races to be, I know they're upset with their generation. I'm looking at my generation, but Lord have mercy. It's going to say, Lord have mercy, 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 you know. But it is what it is. You got people set themselves on fire, but, hey, it is what it is. Prince came out one time on a cross in a dirty diaper, so, hey, what is shock, what is shock. But did you hear about the
two said Prince came?
You remember back in the day, Prince used to come out on a cross playing a guitar with drawers on back in his Dirty Mind days. So, hey, I've seen shocking stuff before. No, did you hear about the gunman in Maryland and the student that set himself on fire in Denver these past couple of days? Have you heard of those things?
Yeah, I heard about what happened in Maryland, and I was shocked. I mean, this kid was 19 years old. It didn't make sense. Well, first of all, who would shoot up a state house? You know what I'm saying? But second of all, he's 19. What is that about? So, yeah, I definitely heard about him. I did not hear about the kid.
Hold on, let me get to the background information. How did it go? What was the little mission on how to go down? The little kid set himself on fire. What did he do? What was that from now? I was with you. Who was I with? Ebony.
Yeah.
What was that kid? What was the news flash came with the kids to Colorado.
Denver.
What was high school?
High school in
the cafeteria in Denver. When the Kevin did in Denver High School sat down, set himself on fire, torched himself.
What is going on with these people? This is incredible.
Right.
What's the heck? I mean, to me, it's scary. And then you're talking about kids doing this stuff, so you gotta wonder what the heck is going on with kids that we think would be COVID in the first place, right?
Well, we gotta find different things to put on these children's minds. We got to take them away from these video games. I'm not going to say the video games are programmed these children's minds. I'm not saying that. But we need to take them out of these rooms and away from these computers and put them back in the garage where they can build computers. We need to start investing in innovative programs for these youths. We need to go ahead and start investing in the future. We need to go ahead and start putting these kids on creating things that's going to better society, you know, and start doing something with their minds. What has happened now, doing my educational piece, you know what I'm saying, that's another part of education, everybody. We need to start investing in the future. I mean, back in the day, we had dreams of backpacks, floating cars, floating houses, flying. The best closest thing I got to the distance is my FaceTime phone. You know, I mean, it's like we stopped innovation. Our children are not innovators like they were back in the day. Like I said earlier, they're taking history out of classes. They're taking education out of classes. You know, if my early Democratic people heard me, if not, the ones who are just not tuning in, earlier I was like, the reason why the Democrats or the liberals or whoever in charge of education at this time, Arne Duncan, are not stressing, and if I'm going to get a black president, are not stressing black history as much, and black history is not looked upon as proud as it once did, great kings of Africa, the great queens of Africa, list all the black accomplishments, list all the black leaders and stuff like that. because if you peel back the history of Black America, you see it was like a one race of people, one political party of people that prevented us from progressing. And the laws that enacted back then are still having tremendous effect on us right now. It's like, we're not going to teach us history. We're not going to teach us innovation. We're going to be stuck in the past having kids going to Colorado, setting themselves on fire, and 19-year-old boys just taking guns and shooting up malls, you know, or going into the trench coat mafia, going into cafeteria. I'm being bullied. Shoot them up. Shoot them up. There has to be a different way. There have to be things taught differently in school, like logic, problem solving, conflict resolution. You know, we look at, we try to put too much things on counseling and bullying and this and that. Well, we can offer class in conflict resolution. We can teach children conflict resolution, how to solve conflict at an early age, and that can prevent a whole lot of things in the future. We can teach kids logic. We can teach critical thinking to make them think critically. There are things, I'm saying this because these classes I took in college, you know, and I laughed because I took the class, critical thinking. I thought it would be a bullshit-ass class, like, aha, I'm thinking critically. But critical thinking class taught you really how to think things out. It was like a very powerful class I took. And I thought, and I think the class so easily should be taught on a younger level, and kids can be able to solve problems. We're just in a messed up world where you got Beyonce dancing like she's a prostitute at 8 o'clock on a Sunday, and Jay-Z coming like a pimp drunk on love. You know, I mean, you know, I don't know if Beyonce want to be Rihanna or not. You know, I don't know, but you know. You tell me, Dana, when you go back and look at it. I don't know if you can tell me after the president's speech tomorrow or on. Hold on, let me get this straight. Ebony, it's Wednesday from 4 to 8 tomorrow. 4 to 7 tomorrow, right. Well, I will be on the air tomorrow. I might have a lot of Tims with me, but you give me a review on Beyonce Wednesday and what your take on that is. And if you can,
you're
going
to be on the air tomorrow?
Yeah. Hold on, I got a lot. And if you can, Dana. If you can, Dana, I want you to look at that case about the lady, the cop, that was strip searching the boy and busted his testicles. You heard about that? That case?
When did she do what?
You heard about the case of the cop who was strip searching the lady and squeezed the boy's testicles so hard that they burst? Did you hear about that?
No.
What about you, Sean? Did you hear about that, Sean?
No, I ain't hear nothing about it.
Last week, a lady, a cop, female cop, was tripping in a bomb.
Hey,
Sean. Drugs.
Hey, what's up, Dan?
So hard that they burst. But these are things that are going on, and you don't hear too much about them. You don't hear Al Sharpton going about that. That should be an outrage. A young boy will be become a eunuch because of some overzealous cops. And it takes a lot of force to want to destroy some young man's testicles, you know what I'm saying?
That is crazy.
That's all like that. Yeah, that is. So, Sean, did you hear about the young boy who set himself on fire in Colorado?
Nah, I ain't heard about it.
What about the shooting in Maryland? What did you think of the shooting in Maryland?
I ain't check it out. I seen something on YouTube. I mean, I seen something on the internet, but I went to YouTube, stopped watching some battle rappers.
Yeah, who won?
I don't know. It'd be interesting, man.
Yeah. So would you be on the internet? You'd be on the internet selling lyrics and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? You'd be trying to go
out there
and fight
battle
rhymes and go on your block and be trying to bust some flows that nobody never heard of. Is that what you'd be doing? Is that what you'd be doing? You know, you'd be fighting through styles and going on a block. You know what I'm saying? Trying to take out the next young cat. Okay.
I ain't heard that though. Hey, but check this out. I know you ain't gonna like this, but I watched a YouTube thing and they was talking about Martin Luther King. They were saying that black colleges and black businesses suffered once Martin Luther King brought civil rights in because we used to support black colleges because that's all we could go to, and black businesses because that's all we could go to. But once Martin Luther King came in, people start leaving the black colleges, going to white colleges. People stop going to black businesses, start going to white businesses.
O.J. Simpson was U.S. Listen, O.J. Simpson was USC for Martin. I mean, Lew Alcindor was USC, UCLA. We don't want to do Martin Luther King Day. I mean, Jim Brown. Where was Jim Brown at?
I'm just asking, man.
No,
I'm just kidding, man.
Syracuse? Okay, what year was that? Well, I was 68, too. Okay, I got you. Like I said, here we are in 2014, drunk in love, like Beyonce say. You know, so everybody drunk in love, and ain't fancies going on. But let's go on business. So you mean to tell me, Martin Luther King said, okay, y'all white folks, okay, black folks, shut y'all business down, y'all go downtown. You mean niggas that stupid? I guess so. Because
I mean, black businesses used to thrive before he came around. And black colleges used to thrive. Now we begging for money. That's all we could support was them.
That's because Bill Clinton cut funding down to black colleges. So did Barack Obama. We're going to deal with that, though. And Rich to the Pell Grant. We're not going to go Democratic Party screen like that. But I'm just saying.
All right. I heard you talking about black people vote Democrat. Republican Party don't represent black people no more, man.
I'll run the show back. I want you to run the show back. Give me a critique on what the stuff that you missed, because you'll find it very interesting. And real talk, you'll find it very interesting. And then, because tomorrow they're gonna be with the president's speech, and then we have our battle rap session, and we can go ahead and flow on why the GOP. You got your style already. You know what I'm saying? So it should be that hard for you to be able to flow. Of why we got to still be slaves now. You know what I'm saying? It ain't too hard to look like still be slaves and stuff like that. We can keep it going. It's a brand new day. The pendulum has turned. The clock has changed back. You know what I'm saying? People are looking their eyes up. They're checking out the shines like this.
How is voting going to bring Detroit back?
Well, that's Detroit voting for Detroit. That's what they vote for Democrats. But let me tell you this. It goes down like this, Sean. You went to a black college. You know the importance of Black History Month, Black History Week. You know if you look at black history, you study history, you go back to one race, one party of people that kept blacks down, and the same law they put is affecting us right now. And that's why the liberals and you progressive people don't want to talk about Black History Month.
Which one helped the blacks? None of them.
I don't know. You tell me.
I mean, I don't understand, man. I'm just
okay. And 2 minutes, 28 seconds.
Two minutes left.
Let me give you Dr. Lewis' version of, because we've been there since before slavery, or what, 1685? Let's go to 1600. Who has helped us in 1600s? Let me see. You say, no, we've been in 1600s, and we're in the same condition. So the end is doom and gloom. All right, ladies and gentlemen, 2 minutes shine to fix all the problems of black America. We know one's helped us. We need help. Just like math ain't seen us no more. People like you need to go and petition the Southern Democrats to put you back on a plantation.
They're Bible toters.
No, I'm talking about the white man. You need to go to petition the white Democrats who had you in that slave plantation when they gave you full cots in the squat and free clothes in the shelter and some pigs on a holiday weekend. You know what I'm saying? And all you did was share some crops. We can go back to that days of time when everybody had our own little thing. I mean, we can go back there. You know, we can go back there. But tomorrow's the President's Day. I'm going to say I get back to the Jimmy Underground Radio Network, and everybody needs to know that Sean going to go check out my show so we can have a nice little battle flow to see why the Democrats got to go. Jimmy Underground Radio Network, good night, and may your God be with you, everybody.
All right, peace.
There was a boy, a very strange enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, a magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing you ever learned
just to love and be loved in return.